Giorgia Meloni has been sworn in as Italy's first far-right prime minister since World War II. The first female leader will head a cabinet with differing views on Ukraine and the European Union. So what's next for Italy and its approach to the world? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Sami Zeidan. Giorgia Meloni will lead Italy's most right-wing administration since the fascist era of Benito Mussolini. Her nationalist Brothers of Italy party won last month's election, along with two others, Matteo Salvini's far-right League and the controversial former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, Forza Italia, were in the winning camp too. Social conservatism, as well as anti-immigration and Eurosceptic rhetoric, all part of Meloni's political appeal. She's also voiced anger about Italy's struggling economy. But she's pledging support for Ukraine, a stance different from her Russia-friendly allies, Salvini and Berlusconi. We'll get to our panel shortly, but first, Cara Legg has this report.
I am Giorgia. I am a woman. I am a mother. I am Italian. I am Christian.
These words at a 2019 rally flanked by former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi and right-wing leader Matteo Salvini have come to define the rise of Giorgia Meloni. Italy's first female prime minister heads the Nationalist Brothers of Italy party, which has its roots in a post-World War II movement that drew in fascist sympathizers and officials. Meloni sees herself as a defender of Italy's traditional Christian values.
Sì alla famiglia naturale. No allo lobby.
Yes to the natural family. No to the LGBT lobby. Yes to sexual identity. No to gender ideology. No to Islamist violence. Yes to secure borders. No to mass migration. No to big international finance. No to the bureaucrats of Brussels.
She takes office at a difficult moment for Italy, facing an economic recession and soaring energy bills. But she's toned down some of her anti-EU rhetoric. The new finance minister is Giancarlo Giorgetti, who was part of the previous unity government and is considered a moderate. The foreign minister is Antonio Tajani, a pro-Europe politician who once headed the European Parliament. And the immigration portfolio went to a technocrat, not the hardliner Matteo Salvini, who became Minister of Infrastructure. One of Meloni's biggest challenges is Italy's Ukraine policy. Leaked audio messages suggest former Prime Minister and ally Silvio Berlusconi bragging about his friendship with Vladimir Putin and appearing to justify Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Putin was supposed to enter Ukraine and reach Kyiv in 1 week, replace the government with a new one chosen by the Russians with a group of wise people.
Meloni has consistently backed Ukraine. She responded to the leak by insisting Italy is a crucial part of Europe and the Atlantic alliance. But doubts linger.
So the question for Europe will be, is Italy going to go wobbly? Will Italy remain a staunch NATO ally? Will Italy continue the Draghi policy of supporting Ukraine against the Russian invasion? Meloni says yes, her deputies are wobbly.
Supporters say Meloni's coalition can help Italy's struggling economy. Critics fear it's shifting Europe's geopolitics further to the right. Cara Legg for Inside Story.
All right, let's bring our guests into the show. They're all joining us from Italy in Rome. Valerie Fargin, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Florence and founder of Espanet Italy, a network for European social policy analysis. In Florence, Alberto Tonini, a Professor of Political Science and Associate Professor of International History and Energy Politics at the University of Florence. And in Milan, Teresa Fallon, a Senior Fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and a former member of the Strategic Advisors Group to NATO. A warm welcome to you all. If I could start with Valerie. So this is the first far-right government since Mussolini, Valerie. How much of a historic shift is taking place in Italian politics?
OK. Well, I guess that a lot of people are sort of very worried about what's happening right now in Italy. My position is, and a lot of people are also happy because for the first time we have a woman. I will say that I'm not that excited about having a woman prime minister, because it is true that this is the first time, but usually women get to very high positions when they're extremely conservative, you know, and it doesn't, you just think of Thatcher, think of Angela Merkel, think of Marine Le Pen. So usually women get to top positions, but they don't really undermine male societal dominance in economic, political and social terms. And in this case in particular, we've got a woman coming for the first time as prime minister in our country. But her approach and her vision and her ideology is extremely right wing. So I'm not that, to be honest, I'm not that happy with what is happening. But at the same time...
So you don't think there'll be a massive shift?
There will be a shift, especially when it comes to discourse, when it comes to the narrative that the government will be putting through. But the room for maneuver is not that much.
All right.
You know, we need the money from Brussels.
All right, we'll get into the money. They always say follow the money, and we will. But let me pick up with Alberto on a point that you mentioned. So, Alberto, how do you think the political establishment is going to receive a female prime minister, first of all?
Well, it's very, very challenging, because even her allies, Mr. Berlusconi and Mr. Salvini, seems to wait for her mistakes. So it's really a very uncomfortable position for Giorgia Meloni. And I think she must be very, very smart and clever to resist not her political opponents, but her political allies, because they were not so happy to be in the position to agree to the nominee of Giorgia Meloni as prime minister. So I think that we are going to have a switch, as Valerie mentioned before, but not so much, because in fact the space for maneuver is not so large. And so I think we are going to have some restriction in the field of civil rights, some probably difference in this sense, because both Giorgia Meloni, but also the other members of her government clearly state that they are not in favor of any new opening to civil rights and any new opening to mass migration or even minus migration. And so this could make a difference with the previous government.
All right, a lot to break down there. Perhaps we should start, Teresa, on policy towards the EU, the balance of power within the EU. Is that going to change now that we've got another government that's from the far right in the heart of the EU now? I mean, it's not just Hungary and Poland, right? How is the balance of power going to shape up between the far right and the non-far right within the EU, if we can break it down that way?
Of course, Orban reached out to Meloni after she won and congratulated her, and he feels that having three countries, he's welcoming them. But it's unlikely that she will find a lot of things to align herself with Orban. She might be closer to Poland because of her political agenda. But nevertheless, out of all 27 EU member states, it's scheduled to receive the bulk of the post-COVID-19 recovery fund from the EU, which would be 200 billion euro. And she cannot sacrifice that. So I expect for her to move more towards the center, and she will have to keep the EU happy. Her recent statements are pro-NATO, pro-EU, and anti-immigration. So I think that as long as she colors within the lines of the EU rules and regulations and can guarantee that this money will be dispersed to the EU, to Italy, she will have a fighting chance. We should also keep in mind that this is going to be one tough winter for the Italians. Energy prices are extremely high with the war in Ukraine. Also, the post-COVID-19 economic landscape in Italy is very troublesome. And even before COVID, they had difficulties. So I think that her main agenda really should be to focus on the economy. Now, she is following in the footsteps of Draghi, who is known as a technocrat. The public really liked him. They felt he was a safe pair of hands as a former head of the European of the ECB, the bank, the European Central Bank. And so they were almost very sad to see him go. It was because of political machinations. So she will have to really perform well. And if she follows maybe his policy, she might have a fighting chance. I'm here in Milan now, and not many people expect her to last longer than spring. So she has a tough road ahead of her.
All right. So I think all three guests are kind of saying the same thing on the point of maneuverability. The scope is limited because you've got to look at who's giving you the money. But I'm wondering, Valerie, looking at it from the perspective of EU integration, that process, will her government make a difference in the speed, the tone of European integration now within the EU?
Yes, I think it does make a big difference moving from Draghi to Meloni. Draghi was definitely, managed for the first time, perhaps the first time in history, to put Italy really in a central position in the integration process. And I cannot expect Meloni to be able to do the same. Just remember, how important Draghi was when he said, whatever it takes. Now, can Meloni say something similar? I don't think. So for Italy, this is not a wonderful thing, what has happened. But I would like our audience to remember that, in fact, she has only 50%.
I can see Teresa wants to come in, but I'll let you finish the thought. Go ahead, Valerie, then I'll bring in Teresa again.
Yeah. Now, what I wanted to say is that we're always considering that she's got 26% of the people that voted. But the fact is that if we take into consideration the total number of voters, then we see that the major party is the party of the ones that did not go to vote, 16 million people. And she's only got 7 million people voting for her, which means she knows very well that a lot of people in Italy are not that happy about the result. It's basically our electoral law that made it possible. So she knows that she's got only 15% of support if we're looking at the total number of people that were entitled to vote. She knows that very well. So she's a tough woman. She's going to work hard, I'm sure about that. But she does know that she can't do whatever she wishes. And I think that it's very clear what she decided when it comes to immigration and the responsibilities she handed out to Salvini. We know very well he didn't get the Minister of Home Affairs, which is the thing that he kept saying, I want that, I want that, I want that, but he didn't get it. It's just the top official that got the responsibility for Home Affairs.
Okay.
And also for the Navy, Coastal, the Sea, she invented a new ministry to make sure that he wouldn't be responsible for the Navy. So we're thinking about the Coastal Guard and what's going to happen with immigration. Nevertheless, I think that there will be symbolic shifts. Since they can't do much in terms of money, they will definitely try to introduce some symbolic policies.
All right, you mentioned a lot there, Valerie, which we'll try and pick up on. Let me bring Teresa in and ask the question from this perspective. How will Brussels deal with Italy now under its first far-right government since World War II? You know, we've got two prominent figures, Meloni, Salvini, have both made comments seen as supportive of the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban in his tussle with Brussels over the rule of law, democracy, corruption allegations, and so on and so forth. Is that going to impact the way Brussels now looks at Italy?
I'm having a little difficulty hearing you, but just to paraphrase what I think you asked was about how Brussels will respond. We've already seen German Chancellor Scholz reach out to Meloni saying that, we're democracies, there are changes of leadership, and we're willing to work with whoever is elected. I think there's also a beauty contest going on here because we see that President Macron of France has a meeting this weekend with the Pope and with the President of Italy. And he has said that if protocol allows, he would like to meet with her on Monday. So that is of great interest to me because he's almost racing to get to Italy first because France and Germany traditional Franco-German engine of the EU is having a rough patch right now. And I think that the fact that Macron is reaching out to Meloni means that he might see some possibility to build support with her in order to maybe get what he wants out of Germany. So there's been a lot of difficult relations within the EU recently. Draghi, Macron, and Scholz, maybe you recall the famous or infamous train ride to Kiev, and they were all kind of squabbling about who had the better train car. So I think that the fact that Macron is reaching out to Meloni now shows that perhaps he wants to have good relations with her and thinks he can get more done if she's on board with his agenda as well. So I think there might be some intra-EU competition, but they understand, you know, Italy is the third biggest economy inside the EU and, you know, the top three. So they really do need to cooperate with Italy at this point.
All right. Alberto, since we're talking about the train ride to Kiev at this point, what do you think about Italy's policy towards the Ukraine war? Will that change? It's got two prominent figures, one of whom, well, he's not in the cabinet, but Berlusconi, who was on tape boasting about how he exchanges vodka and wine with Putin. And Salvini's on the record as saying, hey, you know, we need to roll back the Western sanctions.
Yeah, I think that the Italian position in the Ukraine war is the field, the dimension that is going to change very, very little. Because Giorgia Meloni says more than once that Italy is not going to change his pro-Atlantic stand and his NATO membership, of course. So I think that in this dimension, Italian position will remain absolutely the same. And I would like also to add a few comments on the possible policy of the other European leaders, because I think that from Brussels and the other European governments, there is no intention and there is no interest in pushing Meloni in a corner. In this moment, what they can do is to open a credit to Giorgia Meloni, to avoid that she can go closer and closer to Hungary and the Polish government, what she's not going to do at the moment. And so she has a weak position in the European context. And so I think that the other European governments, France, Germany, and the others are not interested in pushing her towards the Polish or the Hungarian government.
All right, I can see there Valerie wants to say something. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to add something, that it is true that I don't think that the government will change position with respect to Ukraine, but I am aware of the fact that poorer people in our country are not that enthusiastic about the war, and they get less and less enthusiastic the more they have to pay when it comes to their electric bill. So the government will have to cash out a lot of money if it wants to keep people calm, because really across the country, there is a rising sentiment in terms of, you know, the argument is we want peace. Yes, but how do you get peace? How do you get, obviously everyone wants peace, but the point is, are we going to then ask the Ukrainians to surrender? And a lot of people are not that interested. They're right. Worried about their gas bill. And I'm very sorry about that, but that's the truth.
I want to maybe shift gears a little bit because you mentioned immigration policy. How likely is it that we see Meloni's plan of a naval blockade of Libya actually emerge, Valerie, given, you know, the sort of realities that you've been talking about and division of ministries?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Meloni invented this new ministry of Southern Italy and the sea, and responsibility for the protection of our coasts is being handed over to a new ministry. It's not under Salvini's responsibility. So that's a clear attempt by Meloni to try and keep Salvini calm. And I would like us to remember that the vote for Salvini went from 5 million to 2.5. So he's a loser in the current elections. And so is Berlusconi a loser. The only winner in the center-right camp is Meloni. And she's actually taken votes, not from other parts, from the center-left. She's taken votes from Salvini and from Berlusconi. So she knows that she's in a strong position compared to Salvini and Berlusconi. And we have seen how she's acted over the last days and the way she has been behaving. And Salvini is not on the, let's say, he's sort of, for the first time, we don't see him all the time, you know, on the front pages. He's trying to keep back, I guess, because he realizes that he's also in difficulty inside his own party.
Right, right.
But I don't know, because the problem is that they might come up with some crazy idea just to keep their electorate calm.
All right, on that point, what practical changes should we expect then, Teresa, when it comes to immigration policy under this coalition government?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that remains to be seen. I think that this is always a popular issue, especially in Italy, especially with her party. And I would agree with the previous speaker that there has been a redistribution of votes within the right wing. So it's not that she's taking votes from the other parties. It's just a redistribution of votes. So I think that as long as it kind of fits with EU policies, EU policy is pretty clear about immigration. So this might help her get elected, but the reality might be very different on the ground. And I think the number one thing for her is the economy and the rhetoric. You know, you say certain things to get elected, but then how you
the reality of actually doing it is different. Yeah. Listen, since we're talking about economy, and that kind of takes us to divisions within this coalition, maybe we should just take a look at some of the major economic challenges that are facing Giorgia Meloni. Inflation has hit 8.9% in September. That's the highest in nearly 37 years. And that's partly due to the energy crisis facing Europe, which I'm sure we're all aware of. Italy imported 95% of its gas before the Ukraine war, with 40% coming from Russia. That's obviously dropped now. Now it's around 10%. Then there's the colossal debt of more than $2.5 trillion. That's around 150% of Italy's GDP. And there's the relationship with the EU we've been talking about. Italy has been allocated nearly $200 billion in EU grants and loans as part of the post-pandemic recovery fund. But this depends on reforms that must be implemented by 2026. And Alberto, when it comes to some of these issues, there are real divisions within this coalition government, right? It's not only on the issue of whether you support Ukraine, as Meloni does, or you're more Putin-friendly, as Salvini and Berlusconi are painted. It's not only on the issue of where you stand vis-a-vis Brussels fighting it out with Hungary. It's on very economic issues. I mean, Meloni is seen as fiscally conservative. Salvini is a populist spender, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. And this is really the more difficult field for the new government, because Giorgia Meloni will be judged by her voters according to the economics performance of the next 6 or 1 year. And so she is strongly in need to have good results in economics, but she is not an expert of economics. She has very little experience in this field. And also the people closer to Giorgia Meloni are not so good in economics and economic affairs, economic management. And so this is really a clear danger for her.
Do you think the government will last? Do you think, Alberto, is the coalition going to collapse?
No, I don't think so for the moment. But I think that they need to be very, very cautious and very focused on this point, economics, more than other topics, because on this point, the voters and the public opinion will be very, very sensitive.
All right. Well, I'm afraid we are out of time. I know we would like to continue, but another show, another time. For now, let's thank our guests, Valerie Fargen, Alberto Tonini and Teresa Fallon. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the show again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, head over to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is at AJ Inside Story. From me, Sami Zeidan, and the whole team here. For now, it's goodbye.